Welcome to Suncoast Tiger Bay, our special event. My name is Barclay Harless. I'm a local banker and president of Suncoast Tiger Bay Club. Before we begin our program, I want to take a moment to remind everybody why we gather monthly. The Suncoast Tiger Bay Club serves as a civic commons where thought leaders and citizens of all political stripes come together to discuss the pressing issues of our time. These conversations are always important, but in 2020, they are especially important. To keep the conversation going, become a member and attend all of our thought-provoking programming for the year. Next at bat on February 20th will be Brian Auld. He will be discussing the Rays, the Rowdies, and the Trout. Before we begin, I would like to introduce Joe Hamilton of the St. Peter's Group, who will be covering a few important club items. Joe?
Good afternoon, everyone. Great to see all of your faces. A couple administrative items. The new website is up and humming, and we will be going to an official login and register for the lunches and all that good stuff. If you have any trouble doing that, please feel free to reach out to us. But if you haven't renewed your membership, then you will be locked out of the member pricing at the end of this month. We did introduce a couple of interesting new membership levels. We have a congressional level for individuals. If you come to a lot of events, that's $350 for the year and includes two guest passes, which if you use all of those, ends up making your membership free. So kind of a neat option for the folks who want to come to a lot of events. And then we have some corporate levels that we've introduced as well, so I'd encourage anyone who's interested in that sort of thing to check it out. I want to say a couple words about the St. Petersburg group. We've been involved with Tiger Bay now for about a year and a half, and it's been a fantastic journey thus far. This is our second equity event that we've talked about or have facilitated. And, you know, equity is something that St. Petersburg group takes very seriously and we work tirelessly on. And a lot of that's sort of behind the scenes, so I wanted to share a couple of the endeavors that we're working on and then give you a challenge as well. One of the panelists today is Sarah Jane Vadelo. She did a great book on the gas plant district, which is called Where Have All the Mangoes Gone, which traces the history of how that sort of rolled from the neighborhoods that were there to the structure that we have there today. Those are for sale in the back. We had a great launch at the Holocaust Museum, which was well attended, and we had a great conversation there. So, you know, having these conversations is critical. We're also happy to be working with the Deuces Live, with our Catalyst for Good program, helping them get some important grants and tell their story. And we'll be proud to be hosting Gypsy and the MBE Accelerator with their diverse St. Pete initiative here in about a month. And most importantly and most relevant to you is our Community Voices section in the St. Pete Catalyst. I'm assuming most of you have seen the St. Pete Catalyst. We publish every day, Monday through Friday. And our goal is to be 50% crowdsourced content. We have great journalists that form the core of our content, but we want ideas and we want stories from the community. And our Community Voices section accomplishes just that. We welcome anybody to submit an article and start a discussion on the platform, and we'll publish it. And a little known fact is that we actually moderate our comments. So if you'll notice, if you post things on social media, sometimes you sort of grit your teeth when you do it because you know there's going to be a lot of negativity and people hijacking the conversation. And what's great about the Catalyst is that never happens, because if somebody puts something that closes the mind to ideas versus keeping it open to ideas, then it doesn't go up and you never see it. So we have beautiful conversations on the Catalyst. I would encourage you and challenge you to take what's the brilliance that you have here and here and put it out through here and send us your pieces so we can get it out to the community. We had 10,000 visitors yesterday on a Wednesday, so if you think your ideas need to be in front of 10,000 people on a Wednesday, give them to us. Thank you.
What's up? Thank you, Joe. The Suncoast Tiger Bay Club is committed to the development of our future leaders. We call them young tigers. Each luncheon, we welcome local high school and college students to the discussion for civic issues and personal engagement. Please join me in welcoming today's young tigers for today's luncheon. We have Jalea Reedy, is a senior at Osceola Fundamental High School. Kalia Blyden is a junior at Osceola Fundamental High School. And they are joined by their chaperone, Twyla Jackson, also of Osceola Fundamental High School. Thank you. You can help our Young Tigers program by sponsoring a table or a luncheon. Please talk to myself or Amy if you'd like more information. Suncoast Tiger Bait Club also supports future Tigers with our annual scholarship for graduating Pinellas County High School seniors who have demonstrated community involvement and leadership. The Black Bulls on each table give you an opportunity to help contribute to this mission. Please give what you can to support our future leaders. We will now welcome all elected officials and candidates. Please stand and introduce yourselves.
Am I the only one here tonight? Hello, I am Nicole Carr. I'm one of your Pinellas County School Board members. Thank you.
Special thanks to Radio St. Pete and Tiger Bay's Board Secretary Joe Bordeaux, as well as our other media partner, the St. Pete Catalyst, for live broadcasting and coverage of the program today. Last year, this organization followed through on a long overdue need to open up the conversation on the history of race relations in this city. Thanks to the leadership of our former president, Elise Minkoff, and the entire board, last July we had our first panel discussion, and a promise was made to continue that discussion. I'm very proud that the current board has decided to contribute to this and do what we have today. And I hope and encourage this becomes a regular discussion each and every year. As a young man fresh out of college, I went to work for State Representative Daryl Roussan in 2008. I quickly became exposed to the history of race relations in the city from the perspective of a man who had spent the vast majority of his life here. Last year's conversations centered on the past and shone a light on the history of St. Pete for those who lived it, as well as those like myself who continue to learn about it. This year, we've gathered an amazing panel to discuss the future, the next steps in our ongoing journey for this community. These community leaders, along with our engaging moderator, represent change and further development of equity in St. Pete for the coming years. There are significant opportunities, whether it's the pier, the future of Tropicana, Commerce Park, the continued development that goes on every day in this city. Each of these individuals has a stake or has information or data that can affect the equity of our city. The format of today's conversation begins with our moderator, Kimberly Jackson of St. Pete College, who will briefly introduce each of the panel members, Gypsy Gallardo, Dr. Kanika Tomlin, Sarah Jane Valeto, did I pronounce that right? Watson Haynes, and our moderator will ask questions of the panel, a few questions, and then turn it over to Tiger Bay members who have the opportunity to ask questions of the panel. Only Tiger Bay members are allowed to ask questions. You can join today and ask a question. Please remember to introduce yourself. No speeches, please. Each panelist will have 1 to 2 minutes to answer each question. Today's Tiger timer to measure that time is the world-famous Corey Adler. At the end of each question session, we'll have 3 audience members who will rank each question and award the best question will receive our prestigious Fang and Claw Award. The rules for the Fang and Claw question session are on your table. Thank you to our moderator and our esteemed panelists for joining us today. We look forward to hearing more about the future and diversity in our city. I would like to now introduce our moderator, Kimberly Jackson. She's a native of the suburbs of Illinois. She attended Spelman College in Atlanta, where she received her bachelor's in political science with a minor in communications. She attended law school locally at Stetson College of Law. She was the first recipient of the Fred G. Minnis Scholarship and received her JD with a concentration in international relations in 2002. Since graduating, Ms. Jackson has clerked for the Honorable Mary S. Scriven, the then magistrate judge of the Middle District of Florida. She practiced as an associate at various law firms and also served as our city's assistant city attorney. She currently advocates for families who have minors with cognitive disabilities. Since joining St. Pete College, Ms. Jackson has taught American government, state and local government, the college experience, and oversees state and local government internship course. She participates in many community organizations. She's a board member of the following organizations: the St. Pete Arts Advisory, St. Pete Free Clinic, Academy Prep, Neighborly Care Network, the South Pinellas Autism Project, YMCA, Council for Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates, and is the alumni member of Leadership St. Pete. She's also a member of the St. Petersburg Chapel of the Lynx Incorporated, Jack and Jill Incorporated, and Delta Sigma Theta. In her spare time, she enjoys reading, politics, traveling, and spending time with her husband and children. Please welcome Kimberly Jackson.
Very tall, and I'm very short, even with my very high heels that I'm known for wearing. He did a great job of introducing me, but I actually just switched positions. I'm the new executive director of ISPS, which is the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions. It is at St. Petersburg College. It is our think tank. It was created by Congressman Bill Young. We welcome you. Our mission is social, political, and economic solutions. One of our members here, our team members, Jacqueline Schuett, is in the back of the room. And we welcome you. So my husband notoriously tells me to wear my glasses, which I forget and leave all over the place. So you all are going to have to forgive me as I look at the very tiny font. But I want to be very purposeful in how we start the tone for today. It's important. So I want to thank you, first of all, for your commitment to Black History Month and continuing these important conversations. It's important for us to merge our community interests. And as we reallocate and discuss equity in its truest form, we need to be mindful of having conversations where people feel safe to have them and express their viewpoints. As your moderator today, I would like to share thoughts at the outset. To quote a dear friend of mine, communication is a fragile art, especially when you come from disparate backgrounds. As our speakers engage in their truth, I thank you in advance for understanding and hearing them and their perspectives. A community is driven by internal advocacy. It's sustained with intentional efforts. We all have to do our part, and that's broadly. That's the nonprofit area. That's the private industry. That's the individuals that make the community, and that's also our county leaders. It requires an entire effort. So to achieve sustainability, we collectively must have transformational mindset of change and remain open to outside thinking. And I want to add that it's especially important at this juncture in our community when we have this geographic shift with so many people moving from different parts of the country into our bubble and don't understand our vast and very rich history. It's something to be celebrated, but also something to be examined as we move forward and make decisions collectively. With that, I'd like to introduce our panel, and all of them are very well known, so I don't think they need a large introduction. The first is community activist Watson Haynes. He is the president of the Urban League. I'm going to ask you all to come forward, if you don't mind, and have a seat in the hot seats. Watson is going to, of course, give his perspective as being a patriarch in this community and being a longtime advocate. Of course, Deputy Mayor Kanika Tomlin will also share her views. And as we, again, ask these questions, know that they're coming from different lenses, but these are people who are also from and of the community. Of course, Gypsy Gallardo is the CEO of the 2020 Plan and the Executive Director of the One Community Plan. And finally, and I hope I'm saying your name right because I did ask you, designer and author Sarah Badalow. Is that correct? Yes. So I think she brings a unique history, perspective, because she is from France, and she came, that book that you saw on the front was her special project to research our area. And that beautiful display you see over there is a part of her design, and she's still working on finalizing her space to transforming into an architect. But it's important to see a different lens. Sometimes when we have someone who comes from the outside, they shed light, and their perspective is great. As we begin, I have one question for the panel. Each of them will come from their different perspectives, and then, of course, we'll open it for the floor. So, panel, I would like to begin by asking you to discuss your philosophy on economic empowerment and how we make sustainable progress in our city.
How we create wealth so that people can be not dependent on government and everybody else to sustain them and sustain our communities. We've got to look at home ownership, where people can own their homes and not be forced out of their homes by somebody who waves a check at them and say, here's $60,000 for your $200,000 house. And it looks attractive to somebody until 3 years later, they're homeless. I think we got to look at how we sell this community and how we protect people who cannot be protected.
and indeterminates. And so when we're looking at that, we have to look at it comprehensively. It's a wonderful time to be a citizen in St. Petersburg. This is a great place to live. But the continuum around which we experience a quality of life is as disparate as the people who live here. And it's very closely correlated with gender, race, age, and income class. The quality of life that a person in St. Petersburg can expect to enjoy is absolutely determined by those inputs. And so as it relates to economic empowerment, we need to look closely at all of the social determinants that shape and frame a person's quality of life and do what we can to accelerate their movement from poverty to prosperity in a meaningful and sustainable way.
Okay, so good afternoon. It's a perfect question to allow me to share the guiding functional philosophy of the 2020 plan and the One Community plan. And that philosophy is simple. We have two taglines. One is real money in real people's pockets. And the other is growing the bank accounts, paychecks, and balance sheets of African Americans in St. Petersburg, which is featured somewhere near the top of our handout available at the front desk. So I came to St. Petersburg, Watson will remember this, in the mid-90s, shortly after the race riots. And I witnessed the successive mayoral administrations, Mayor David Fisher, followed by Mayor Rick Baker, who appointed our first black deputy mayor, focus extensively on brick and mortar revitalization in the community. There was a period where we were recognized across America for our pace of brick and mortar development, new construction, rehabilitation, historic preservation of roughly 500,000 square feet in South St. Petersburg and about 3,000 housing units turned over. And when the Christman administration was ascendant, and by the way, Deputy Mayor was named in Christman's mind the very day he was elected to become his deputy mayor, we worked with the administration to say, look, we built all this stuff, but the poverty needle hasn't moved. And that's not only in South St. Pete, that was citywide. White poverty had increased during those years, in part due to the recession of 2007 to 2009, and black poverty had remained static over those years despite that wealth of development. So our philosophy to economic empowerment became about rolling up your sleeves, nitty-gritty, working with people to help them enter the workforce, climb the career ladder to earn more, start businesses, grow businesses, and for us, economic growth boiled down to helping people to earn more money, which is how you lift them above the poverty line, and helping them to grow, to Watson's point, in wealth.
So I'm going to answer from a bit of an architectural perspective, because that's sort of the lens through which I've looked at this issue and I've come to learn from it. And I think that, generally speaking, we need to re-examine our ideals of urban identity, citizenship, and belonging to construct our environments more responsibly. And I think that takes an effort to look into the past to inform the future. And so, the issue with St. Pete, which is very striking, and when I moved here in 1997, I came from a completely different context. And when you see sort of the disparity that exists economically and socially that is cut along racial lines, it's quite shocking. And if you don't know why that happens, you just sort of wonder, and you don't get answers, and it doesn't further understanding. And I came upon this project that I worked on, and I interviewed people from the community and sort of started digging and trying to understand why things are the way they are. And once we inform ourselves as to how we got here, it'll help further the conversation of how we move forward. And so My thesis focused around implementing or access and connectivity between the South Side St. Pete and downtown St. Pete, because the highway and the Tropicana Field contribute to a division, which a physical barrier, which exists between both. And if we reestablish physical continuity, if we invite people to live back on the site, if we create spaces where people from multiple sort of income levels and backgrounds can live together and coexist, then we strengthen the bonds of community.
I like what all of you all said about that. Interestingly, we moved here at the same time. I moved here in 1997, and shortly after some of the disturbances. And you start seeing about, when you come from different areas, the question that always comes to my mind, which you all discuss so well, is what is the cost of not assigning equity? Because it still is impactful to all of us when we don't address what that is. And how do we continue to move forward to being efficient, socially responsible, and optimal while we try to establish non-bias to the extent we can moving forward, because we all have to acknowledge that everyone has individual and respective biases. With that, I'm going to open the questions to the floor. Okay, so I have some clarity. Tiger Bay members and young Tigers only may answer, ask questions. It's my understanding that we have our lovely timer who will keep you on task. Question.
My question to you is, you didn't mention it specifically, what is the role of education in the road you follow to progress, to transform? And how does the educational architecture in Pinellas County serve that purpose or disserve that purpose?
Was the question directed to any specific panelists or all of them? Thank you.
Answer, but only on behalf of Reverend Watson Haynes, who was the founding co-chair of Concerned Organizations for Quality Education for Black Students. And Watson, I hope you don't mind. There were activists, now deceased, Adele Jemison, Verl Davis, and Mr. Clarence Givens, who were the driving force behind that. And praise God for them and their activism over so many years. They were the ones to confront the school district over the lingering achievement gap following the two major court cases. The first one filed by James Sanderlin, hope anybody knows that name, way back in 1964, before the school district even integrated and was part of the energy that ultimately forced integration here. I believe in the long arc of history. I think that we have step by step battled against the structural racism and the implicit bias, not to mention the ingrained or entrenched differences in achievement among our students. And I think over the years we've chipped away at that, sometimes during major episodes of activism, such as COQUEB's push to reopen federal mediation of the court cases, which forced Superintendent Wilcox to the table to come up with a plan to close the gap, followed by Superintendent, was it Jansen, and her activism, now Dr. Greco, who's gone even deeper. And so I think our system has learned, adopted, and has made quantitative and qualitative gains in closing that gap, and I would characterize us as being at a breakthrough in that movement.
Can I answer to that question as well? We've learned a lot over our 7 years of service about this question. Education and exposure are absolutely essential to our city's transformation and step into the fullness of the potential
and aspiration that we aspire as we craft our future city. A critical thing that we've learned is that for too long and too often our focus has been on K through 12, and that's absolutely critical. But early learning years and the focus that we put into ensuring that every young child who's entering our school system has access to a robust and qualified and equitable early learning education, that's what I mean when I say inputs determine our outcomes. We have to nail that if we're going to make any meaningful progress in our K through 12 situation. And then we need to extend the look to post-graduation. What happens, what are the educational opportunities, and what are the training opportunities in our community beyond 12th grade? How are people getting the access and exposure that they need to create self-perpetuating opportunities so that they can determine their own quality of life in ways that are meaningful and sustainable and transcend whatever it is that they learned in K through 12. It's a continuum, and we need to nail every aspect of it all along the way.
I think simply put, when we embarked on creating COFEPS in 2001, it took us from 2001 to just a couple of years ago of getting the school system to actually admit that things were happening in our schools. Before failure factories, in 2001, we were talking about failure factories. It was most of the schools in South St. Petersburg, and everybody looked the other way. It was only when we got to a mediation that Judge Meriday said, you guys need to settle this thing. We had superintendent who actually walked into mediation without a coat and tie while all of us were sitting in the room. That's the kind of, we would call the contact the superintendent about the education, miseducation of African-American students, and they would say, well, we're educating everybody. We're treating everybody the same. It took a judge to say that doesn't sound right. And so we finally, and a couple of years ago, got the school system to admit, and thanks to Dr. Grego for saying, we are wrong. We don't need to just take the gap and just narrow the gap. He said we need to close the gap. And that became the foundation for us settling with the school board, a case that should not have taken 19 years. 19 years of us driving up and down the road from St. Pete to the school board continuously every month talking on behalf of black kids who need the same opportunity that white kids and I got when I was at St. Pete High School.
Next question. I'd like to add before you ask your question as an educator and acknowledge Dr. Griffith, who is the provost of our downtown and midtown campuses for St. Petersburg College, that it has lasting generational challenges when we don't start, as Dr. Tomlin said, at the very beginning, because then we have all of these barriers that continue and perpetuate the issues that are, again, socially connected and economically driven. Question.
Bob Safransky, I'm a retired Pinellas County School teacher and administrator, and also an adjunct professor of school law and American government. But I have a question. Why haven't the black community gone back to their roots during World War II and saw what the Tuskegee men did by coming up with the Red Tail Squadron? And they have six principles, which I think are ones that you should have and use. Aim high, believe in yourself, excuse me, and use your brain, be ready to go, never quit, and expect to win. And the Red Tail Squadron was the one that the question is, why aren't you using those six principles, talking to kids and saying, this is what we want you to do because this way it's successful for those men during World War II to be the best fighter squadron.
Thank you. If I could also summarize, if you would address, what have we done well as a community and what specific efforts do you perceive we can do better to address economic equity and inclusion? Thank you.
lots of chance to tell the great story of the many things we're doing well as a community. It's illustrated by the breadth and depth of this panel. We've called together stakeholders from across our community, across sector collaborations, to really amplify what we've come together in collective consciousness to decide now is the time to change St. Petersburg. We've done it in amazing ways. One of the things that we're most proud of in City Hall is that we have elevated the work of community ed organizations in ways that have never been done in the city of St. Petersburg, working with groups like 2020 and One Community to breathe tangible life via funding and commitment into these efforts to legitimize them in a way that has never been done before, or at least to the establishment endorsing the importance of the goals that are being achieved. We approach the goals of the 2020 plan and the One Community plan, which I'm sure Gypsy will tell you a bit more about in just a minute, with as much diligence and effort and commitment as we approach the way we pave our roads and build our infrastructure. That is a tidal change in the approach of St. Petersburg. What comes as a result is that we are going to achieve equity because it's not only an aspiration. We have a very focused plan. It's manifesting in the poverty rate in our city, decreasing by more than 30% overall and by more than 45% in the African-American community. Not because of serendipity, but because we have strategic plans that we've laid out, that we've worked through systemically, that we've funded, that we've listened to the community, and it's making a difference. The question of where we're telling our children, we are absolutely educating our children, and we are educating all of our children to understand the importance of acknowledging what has happened in our community, accepting the significant impact it has had generationally, understanding what it will take to move the needle of generational change, and then committing to all of the resources it takes to make it happen.
Okay, and this is gonna sound like it challenges Mr. Safransky's question. For those who may not know this, he is in fact one of the most prolific community servant leaders that I've witnessed in my years of activism here. So it's not intended to challenge you personally, Mr. Safransky, but the first thing that occurred to me is we are teaching our children those things. The white poor exhibit many of the same deficits of intergenerational transfer of values as the black poor. But the majority of the black community is not poor, which is a misperception in this community. And everyone I know is aspirational, responsible, teaching their children the right values, sending their children to school. What is little known in St. Petersburg is that we have a major black brain drain phenomenon here. Our best and brightest leave St. Pete not finding the opportunities to advance in their careers and to alight to the achievements that they attain elsewhere. Atlanta. How many St. Pete natives are in Atlanta? New York, Houston, L.A.? And the question that I think a lot of our white community needs to grapple with is, why is our city so unwelcoming? Why are there so few African Americans who can climb the corporate career ladder here in St. Petersburg who do well in this environment? So that's one piece. Then to Kimberly's question of what we've done well, this is another thing that we don't understand. The black male graduation rate has tripled since Watson and I and Pastor Murphy and others led advocacy campaigns around the achievement gap. Poverty rate down by about 45 to 47% in the black community. Black income has grown. Black wealth attained has grown in St. Petersburg, yet there's this constant narrative of ubiquitous failure in the black community that we need to dispense with. It's time to move on the narrative that we've tried and tried and spent hundreds of millions of dollars and nothing's changed. Tons of things have changed and progressed in our community, and we need you all to recognize that.
I think what we've done right in this city is that we've opened our minds to the conversations that need to occur. And, you know, I approached the city with an idea, and they listened to me, you know, and I think that that is not like many other cities that would actually, you know, this project that I did and the platform that I was given to speak would not have happened in Tampa, for example. We're just a very different city. And we've come a long way, and I think we can't look at the situation, any situation, in a vacuum. There's a context to everything. And I feel that, you know, the African American community in St. Petersburg had a heyday in the 1950s and 60s, where there was a growing wealth, where there were locally minority-owned businesses lining the streets of 22nd Street South. There were over 100 of them at one point. The gas plant district, which is now the Tropicana Field site, had, at the time of its raising, 33 locally owned businesses. And what was taken away when those buildings were destroyed were people's livelihoods. You can compensate somebody for land, but you can't compensate them for a lifetime of earning and for the generation, the passing down of that business from a generation to another. And so when we tell people to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, if those bootstraps have been severed through repeated acts of economic violence and infrastructural violence onto a community, you cannot expect that to be the answer. You know, so I feel that we need to sort of take a deep look at the past of our city to understand it better and move forward in the future with solutions that are relevant to who we are.
Question?
I'd like to ask each of the panelists to look into your crystal balls. This relates to the gas plant, Tropicana Field site. What do you think is the likely development that actually will take place, not what you would like to take place?
Sorry, Dr. Tomlin, that's for you. gladly, I take this question because I challenge this room to resolve today that what takes place is exactly what we aspire to take place, because this community is in charge of the answer to that question, and we are building a process that is absolutely inclusive and designed to engage the community, understand the opportunity, and develop it in a way that it delivers on the promise of the possibility of that site. That site is generationally transformative for this community on so many levels. It's a chance for St. Petersburg as a community to demonstrate and actualize the rhetoric that we've long held and talked about in settings like this, and to make it a reality. We're going to do that because we're moving in a very methodical, intentional, purposeful way to ensure that it is a catalytic enzyme for the creation of economic empowerment and the uplifting of people from every part of our community, regardless of the corner of the community from which they come. That site absolutely carries a very heavy burden of expectation and history of marginalization. And as much as it has been an illustration for ways to not honor the importance of individuality in the community, it can become a beacon, a national and international model for how a city does it right, how a city connects with its people and its community to absolutely create exactly what it intends to see there. So that's not a hope, that's not a wish, that's my bottom line expectation. We will see at that site exactly what we as a community have charted and charted the course for that site.
Okay. So I have little to add except
Just wanted to do a quick couple of shout-outs. Harvey Landris, thank you, is our co-chair of the 2020 plan since 2013. Thank you for your service. And Jason, with Downtown Partnership, and I and six others just returned from a week at the Bloomberg Harvard City Leadership Initiative, 84 hours of intensive planning and visioning around the future of Tropicana Stadium, the redevelopment project. And I can say this, I don't know, Harvey, the reality of what will happen at that site, but I can say two things, is that our city is moving in ways that will be transformative, where everything that Deputy Mayor just spoke will come true. And the second thing is that we're being watched across the nation for coming up with a formula for authentic engagement of community and real measurable advances toward equity. Because it's a challenge we learned from that intensive that cities across America are grappling with.
Well, while I don't have a role at this point in time in the future of what will happen at the Tropicana field site, I think my role at this time is to sort of share what I've been through and what allowed me to understand why it's important that something special happen at the Tropicana field site. Because when I was introduced to this project in August of 2018, I was invited to a design charrette in which students from USF were invited to rethink what could happen on the site. I had no concept of why that would be, why the stadium was even a problem. And just through a cursory overview of the site, I came to realize that there were some issues that I didn't quite understand, and I was intrigued. And so I just started delving deeper and deeper, and I was lucky to have interviews with community members, which informed a lot of my thinking, including Reverend Watson Haynes, who gave me his time. And since he had lived on the site, he talked to me about it. And through educating myself, I came to understand how important that space is and why it is that whatever it is that we do there needs to be intentionally inclusive. And what does that mean? It can be done in a lot of ways, you know. And so in the thesis, I go into things that aspects of it that I think would be good ingredients to that final outcome. And so I think that the role of my research at this point in time is to inform, because an informed population can then follow along with the thinking of the city, with the thinking of the people who are in charge and who know the history of the space. And if everybody has the same amount of information and there's a social consciousness that takes over St. Petersburg, North St. Petersburg, that currently exists in South St. Petersburg, that we can all have an educated conversation.
Having been raised on that site, having spent my childhood on that site, I recall the days when the community got together and told us that we're going to move. But we're going to move because the jobs were going to be created on that site. Jobs didn't happen, but we moved. And so the community got together and decided, well, we're going to put this stadium up. And the first thing I said, it's quoted in at that time, the St. Pete Times, was that African Americans did not expect to have jobs selling beer and peanuts. And that's what we got. So we understand that while we didn't, and folk look at us and say, what y'all going to do about Tropicana? What we going to do about it? We didn't even build it. This Tropicana field and the Rays belong to this community. And we as a community must rise up and do something about it as a community and not point to black folk who live down there and say, what y'all gonna do now?
How are we doing on timing? Okay. Okay. There was a question here. Sorry.
Jason Mathis with the Partnership. Gypsy, it was such a pleasure to spend that time with you, and I want to applaud all of the panelists for your work. It's really, really meaningful and important. My question is, I think related a little bit to the answers that you just gave. You have about 200 people in the room here. What practical advice would you give all of these people who want to be ambassadors, who want to do the right thing, who want to be part of the solution? How can you empower this group, regardless of race or socioeconomic status, to go out and be part of creating a more inclusive St. Pete? And this is your chance to tell us what to do and where to go.
I think that has to be a personal commitment of each one of us in this room. If we want to do something about it, we can't look to the right or left and say, what are the people next to me going to do about it, and I'll help them. We have to be able to say what we want to happen. I commend Dr. Tumlin to use this word all the time with us, transformative. And that's what we have to be if we want to make some things happen, even in this community. We've got to do it with each other. And if you decide that you want to have somebody else to go with you, fine, but do it yourself. We've got a mayor who's invested himself in not in buildings, but in people. And that's where we've got to start. We've got to start with the people who we know and say, let's go together and let's form a solution to the challenges within this community.
I think about this along four strategic pathways that I think as a community we need to matriculate through to become the city we envision. And that's acknowledge, accept, actualize, and then ascend. It's critical that we acknowledge what has happened here and the truth of that. Acknowledge, you know, both the shame-filled pain of systemic discrimination and the light-filled triumph of being a city right now that in many ways is a standard bearer and a record setter for diversity and inclusion. Both of those are true. We need to embrace the dichotomy of who we are, who our community is as a being, and then accept that truth and understand that who we've been does not need to dictate who we will be, and realize that we are in charge of what will be. We have all of the power to do absolutely everything we need to become the city that we want. It's up to us. We have to be intentional, we have to be purposeful in the ways that we not only map out and strategize about inclusion, but the ways that we actualize that and create programs and funding and positions, not only as collaboratives and create tables and say there's room enough for all of us to come around a table and represent our separate interests, but create tables of combined interests. Have different people representing the interest of people that they never have. It's possible because we live in a city that's much more actualized than the one in which I grew up. We just have to decide that it's time. We have to put in the resources that are required. We have to push ourselves outside of our comfort zones and insist on that next level of greatness that will take us from a great city to an iconic one as it relates to diversity, inclusion, and equity.
Dr. Tomlin is so poetic, and I don't know how she does it, and I'm so practical. And for me, it's all about the initiatives here and many others. I want to make a pitch for you all offering your time, talent, and treasure to the economic advancement initiatives that are happening by, just to name a few, Tampa Bay Black Business Investment Corporation, Pinellas County Urban League, One Community 2020 Plan, the programs at St. Petersburg College, which also has a foundation, to target your time, talent, and treasure toward those. Our webs or email address and contact information is on the back of this in case you'd like to write to us and say, hey, I'm interested in doing something. There is also a directory on our website, One Community St. Pete, of current community economic development initiatives with contact information for each that people can get involved in. And then I would say if you're an employer, if you run a nonprofit organization, think strongly about the next job opening you have, being targeting that job opportunity to underrepresented populations. Think about doing business with the next time you go out to bid or you contract with an organization or seeking services, think about targeting that to a black-owned, Latino-owned organization. Just recognizing two of our mentee young business owners are here today, Roy James with James Insurance, Shantavia Turner with Turnkey Property Management, and a third person who's become my brain, Elizabeth Siplin with Impact Solutions. So for me, it's the practical, everyday steps of get active with something, contribute to one of these advancement initiatives, and we have done this these initiatives so cost-effectively, wouldn't you say, Watson, that whatever you contribute toward these efforts will be put to good use.
So from my perspective, I would say we just need to have honest conversations with ourselves and with our friends and with our family, and we need to inform ourselves and inform others of the way things are, the way things have been, and the way things can be. And I think we shouldn't be afraid to dream and to dream big, because with the Tropicana field site is city-owned, and we, as the residents of this city, have a right to demand that the outcome be different.
Tom Dunn, I was deeply troubled by your statement that the best and brightest young African Americans are leaving St. Petersburg. My question to all of you is that true? And if so, elaborate on that.
It is indeed true. Those of us with adult children here, just to name example, Brent is raising his hand here. I know that Pastor Murphy's two children left the city. Two of my children left the city. And I know lots of peers in my age group whose children choose to make their life and career elsewhere, but it's also substantiated by the data. Not to bore anybody, but if you look at our birth rate versus our death rate and factor in our mobility rate, there is data evidence that brain drain is happening, supported by anecdotal evidence. And the second part of your question, sir, was it why is that, or was it what can we do about it? I can't remember.
Racism or what have you, but I am shocked by your statement, and obviously the question is, what can you do about it?
Yeah, and I guess, and again, I'm a super practical person, and not super great. I'm a great worker, but not necessarily a great strategist. But my two cents about that is, we've got to open the doors of opportunity to our young people. Now, to our credit as a city, my son made his career in New York and L.A. and came back and gave the positive feedback that, oh, there's a scene here now, right? When he left, there was absolutely no scene, no entertainment venues downtown, no young black professional, young black artist convenings where he could find his home. And that scene is now beginning to emerge. So I would advise that if we can do anything, it's to support the efforts and the work and the visibility of our young people, starting from that college group that goes away and comes home to visit. Let them see a new energy in St. Pete when they do come home and visit, so that they're more inclined to stay after college, all the way through that young adult career building phase. Let them see a more welcoming, inclusive St. Pete that's ready to advance them to their full potential.
It's good that you're shocked. Hopefully we'll feel urgent about that fact, because that is perhaps the number one threat to our likelihood that we'll reach our potential as a city. And that is not an issue that is specific to the African-American community. That is an issue as it relates to retaining the brightest, youngest talent, regardless of background, in our community. We've recognized this as an issue and are working very strategically to answer it through a comprehensive economic development strategy that we call Grow Smarter, which has identified 5 targeted industries designed to create inclusive prosperity where our opportunities are greatest to grow, with an intentional effort to create an engineer opportunity around high-skill, high-wage jobs. Because if we are able to create more high-skill, high-wage opportunities once we send our best and brightest young people off into the world to go learn, there needs to be a resource for them to come back to contribute to the talent pool here. We have to create high-skill, high-wage jobs across these 5 targeted sectors, which range from creative arts and design, as you were speaking to marine and life sciences, and specialized manufacturing. That is the key to St. Petersburg's generational shift and trajectory. It will influence and inform our quality of life, what we can expect culturally, what we can expect on really every level of determinant of what makes a city great. And if we don't create opportunities that match the potential of the best students we're producing, we should have no expectation other than they will seek their dreams and fulfill their potential in cities that will.
So lastly, I think
I say remove the ceiling.
I don't think we have any time for additional questions. I want to ask this specifically to Watson in terms of what do you think community engagement and discussion with our communities means in being a part of the process of change?
I guess when we talk about what this community should look like, when we talk about change, there's a need to create a seamless community where there's no such thing as Southside, Midtown, or whatever else is over there. We've got to create that opportunity. Then we've got to look at capital infusion in businesses to give a business a chance. You know, when I was in business in downtown St. Pete, I was the only African-American down there selling office supplies and all. But that was Reverend Murphy began to work with the Housing Authority and came to me and said, look, I need you to begin to supply the Housing Authority with office supplies. That gave me a leg up. We got to the point with the Department of Correction, we went to ask them, can you give us a contract for $1 million? And they said, yes. We went to the bank, and the bank said, well, we can't take a risk on you. We need infusion in some of these businesses and the ability to take a chance with some of these businesses in the African-American community as we do in the greater community. We need to look at housing that's decent, safe, sanitary, and affordable. We need to make sure that our education is the best there can be, and where parents feel empowered to do something about the lives of their children in this school system when they have to meet with one teacher, but you can't meet with one, you got to meet with all 5.
Did you have something else?
Okay, that was it.
I addressed that to Watson, but does anyone else want to respond? No? Yes? No? Okay. Are we at the point where are you going to discuss, because I have one closing remark if you want me to say it now? Okay.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second and let the young tiger ask one question of the panel? We have a couple minutes, so.
I'm Kalijah Blyden. I go to Osceola Fundamental High School. My question to you is, how are you working to make education in the North schools and the South schools the same?
Well, I think it started with the school system developing Bridging the Gap. It started with the superintendent of schools who said, we're going to close the gap and we're going to make education equal. Now, that's the commitment from the school system, and we have to make sure that we get the school system to follow through to create seamless schools. We've got to encourage the school system to not send teachers to teach in the African-American community who's not qualified to teach or who's scared to teach. We've got to change that out. Then we've got to work on where we send our kids. All African-American kids don't need to go to college. We've got to start looking at certifications. We've got to start looking at these opportunities where African-Americans can, you know, the plumber that came to my house yesterday, that plumber came to my house and was there 15 minutes and had to get a $300 check. I can't understand that. I do not understand. So why are we continuing to do this in sending our kids and not encouraging our kids to do things differently? And our education system has to also do what they can in promoting these kids and saying to them, you know what, I think you've got some opportunities, but it's not going to college. We've got to be firm about that. St. Pete College offers some of the greatest opportunities for certifications. And if you go get encourage some of these kids to get certified in certain areas, they will come out making more money than a starting school teacher. We've got to start thinking differently and doing differently and then creating opportunities where all of our schools are the same.
That's exactly right. And you asked about how can we make our north schools the same as our south schools. We'd answer that with, you asked about schools, but the question could be asked about any part of our community, any amenity within our community. And we think it's not treating the African-American community or those people who live south of Central as a monolith, recognizing the individuality and value that everybody who's a part of this community brings. For example, we refer to Midtown as though it is a monolithic neighborhood. It's made up of 17 neighborhoods. We're a city of neighborhoods. We celebrate the individuality and contributions of neighborhoods. And people would squibble and quarrel with you greatly if you confuse Granada Terrace with Old Northeast or Crescent Lake with Crescent Heights. Yet we refer to 17 individual neighborhoods, all with very specific value and lots of social capital around very different aims, as one monolithic place, Midtown. When we begin to understand that the people who comprise this city are individual in their hopes and their dreams and their aspirations and the way they go about their lives, then that respect will inform the way we build and maintain our city, and such answers will take care of themselves.
Just a positive closing remark, and young man, it's not to your question, but beautifully asked question in front of an audience of 200 adults. Kudos to you. I could not do that when I was your age. Yeah. But just on a positive note, I've been active in South St. Petersburg as a community leader and activist. Some people shy away from the term community leader. A leader is one who leads. And we have literally hundreds of active people leading in South St. Petersburg. But the positive note I want to leave with you is that we have turned a corner in St. Petersburg. Not only are we seeing the needle move in important ways almost across the board, including health outcomes improving, just you kind of name the area of life, and the quality of life numerically has gotten better for African Americans. Where I speak so often is in our narrative about the Black community and letting our narrative catch up with where we are as a city. And one of the places where we are as a city is in a place of unprecedented partnership and collaboration across organizations, downtown, the old school term Midtown, South St. Pete, every part of this city, you see cross-racial, cross-sector organizations working together on a scale and in ways that I have not seen in my 2 decades plus activism in this community and have not seen in the history books. So I think we are at a breakthrough moment. To Tom's question, I don't want to leave you with any sort of shroud following that comment. And I think that if we put pedal to metal in the next decade, we will make history and be heralded and serve as a guide to cities across America for how to achieve economic equity.
I think one of the things we do want to look at, and I was given a note to address this issue, is the whole issue of Commerce Park. Commerce Park has to be transformative. It has to be done like it's not usually done. What normally happens in our community is these outside developers come in, they develop something, and they leave. And then they say, that's yours and that's your community. I see transformation having to happen where the community, and I thank Gypsy for, a lot of these folk are here a result of Gypsy being crazy enough to invite people to the table. And they show up, and they feel empowered to do things. And so we have an opportunity in Commerce Park to do things for the community and with the community, and not say, that's yours, you deal with it. And I think that there's some great things happening that's going to happen there, and it's as a result of people sitting down together. My being a person who was born and raised in St. Petersburg, I'd like to see something happen to Deuces Rising than it to be the epitome of Black Wall Street in St. Petersburg.
I believe that that will happen, Watson, absolutely. I'd like to leave us with a little bit of homework, because this question that we've posed to ourselves, and it should not be lost on us, that we are sitting talking about race, diversity, and inclusion, hosted by Tiger Bay in the St. Pete Yacht Club. There's significance in that. But we will not answer this question between Monday through Friday. We are going to have to reach outside of our comfort zones. We've done the low-hanging fruit work. We've identified that it's time to truly engineer opportunity that produces equity in a self-perpetuating, sustainable way. But now we have to do the work. And so in those places and spaces that we create our lives, not just our work, not just where we go to work and where we come together through blazed paths of integration, but where we go to church and where we live and where we shop and eat dinner. And this is for the Black people in the room and the white people in the room and the Asian people in the room and all of us. After we leave our 9-to-5 enclaves of integration, how much integration do we practice and see in our everyday lives? And if we can go through a week or a month or a year without ever interacting outside of 9-to-5, Monday through Friday, with anybody who looks, lives, and is different than us, why should we have an expectation of creating a society that lives and breathes that way? We have to push ourselves outside of that. And I'd invite everybody to give yourself a deadline by which you feel too much time has passed before, since you've sat next to, talked with, experienced, had exposure with someone different than you, and do what it takes to make sure you break that barrier. Those are the barriers that are going to rewrite the narratives and help us understand why different isn't a problem, and help us understand how to celebrate the individuality in one another that will really create the future city that we all envision.
Thank you. Thank you. So I would like just to close by saying I'm sort of pragmatic like Gypsy. There's power in this room. I sit in a lot of different rooms with a lot of different people. There's influence in this room, in the private sector, in the nonprofit sector, in the government sector. Words matter to me. We know what equity is. We know what equity is. So the question you have to ask yourself is, what are you willing to do? That's an internal question, because we all know what to do. But then it becomes, what are you willing to do? So I want to thank you for your time, and I'm going to pass it and let him find the question, the best question of the day.
Thank you. And Tiger Bay is honored to be able to have the time that you folks have taken out of your busy schedules to be here. Thank you, Kim Jackson, for everything and orchestrating this. While we calculate the winner of the world-famous prestigious Fang and Claw Award winner. I just want to thank everyone, remind you about February 20th is the Brian Auld with the Tampa Bay Rays, Rowdies, and our Trop Site discussion. We have the winner. Where am I looking? Nope. Does anybody have the winner? There's still tabulating in Iowa. I'll let Corey Adler take over then. Just select. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Our young Tiger is the winner today. So each one of the panelists will also get our awesome coffee mug, and I will make a commitment now that this will be an ongoing conversation. This will not be the last time that Tiger Bay has this type of discussion. So thank you all so much, and if you all stay up here, we'll take a picture. Thank you. Radio. Saint Pete.